This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. We begin in Washington, where the Supreme Court heard opening arguments this morning in the case concerning the legality of the DACA program, or Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. The case consolidates three separate legal challenges to the Trump administration's attempt to end the Obama-era program, which delayed the deportation of hundreds of thousands of undocumented immigrants who were brought to the U.S. as children. WBUR senior correspondent Kimberly Atkins was in the court today. She joins us now from D.C. Kimberly, welcome.
Hi, Tiziana.
Hi there. So, Kimberly, what was the mood this morning as the court prepared to hear the arguments?
Yeah, so outside the court, there were hundreds of people, mostly people in favor of DACA, participants themselves, immigrants, and others, rallying outside the court. That's not unusual. You generally see people protesting one side and the other in a case. But what was unusual is that the crowd was very pro-DACA, and it was so big they actually had to close off the street right in front of the court, the street, First Street, that separates the court from the Congress. They had to close it down because there were so many people. Of course, inside the court, it was very staid and formal as the lawyers made their arguments in favor and against keeping that program in place.
So a really important case, clearly. It's three combined. What was at the heart of what was before the court today?
So essentially, there are challengers, which include 16 states, including Massachusetts, and other groups who said the decision by Donald Trump, the Trump administration, to end this program was made contrary to federal law. Now, remember, DACA was implemented in 2012 by Barack Obama when Congress failed to come up with any sort of immigration solution to deal with immigrants at all, particularly these young dreamers, people who were brought into the country as children who really don't know any other place and who just want to work and go to school or enroll into the military. So he created this program to allow them a legal path to do that, not citizenship, but just be able to legally work and go to school and join the military in the country. President Trump came in and initially said he was going to leave it in place. But as the political tides turned and he wanted to campaign on being tough on immigration, instead decided to rescind it. And that put the fate of between 700 and 800,000 people enrolled in this program in jeopardy.
So was this a situation where one side said it wasn't legal in the first place and the other side said, well, you can't just end it?
Yes. So essentially, what the challengers were saying is that the way that the Trump administration ended it violated a law called the Administrative Procedure Act. If it sounds dry, that's because it is.
And it does.
But what it basically means is an agency can't just make a decision. It has a lot of broad authority, but it can't just make a decision for an arbitrary and capricious reason. They have to put forward a real justifiable reason to do that. And these challengers said the Trump administration has not done that. The administration shoots back and says, well, we'd have put forward a reason. We believe that DACA was illegal and that we had to do it. But even if the court finds that it wasn't illegal, we still have the authority to do it. And so that's where the push and pull really is on the merits of this case.
So you were in the room. How did the court seem to be receiving the arguments? Was there any telegraphing there of how this might come out?
Not much. I mean, sometimes you see it. It's always a tricky proposition to try to guess what the court will do based on arguments. But more or less, it seemed pretty ideologically split, with the more conservative justices seeming to be sympathetic to the administration's arguments and the more liberal justices siding with the challengers. It probably will come down to Chief Justice Roberts. But there is a potential twist. There is one argument in this case that says, look, the government can put forward a reason, but if it's a bad reason or if it's not the real reason, then that can't stand. Something very similar happened in the census case, if you recall, that the reason that the government gave for trying to put the citizenship question on the 2020 census, the court found that while the government really could do it for any reason, the reason that they gave was bad. And that was one of the arguments made by the challengers. And John Roberts joined in finding in the census case in in ruling that the reason that the Trump administration gave was bad. So I would watch him in this case, but that's one potential way that these challengers could possibly win.
So since the administration announced it would end DACA in 2017, a bunch of lower courts have been kind of instrumental in shielding the Dreamers from deportation through various stays. How will those lower court decisions be factored into the court case now that it's before the Supreme Court?
Yeah. So, I mean, one reason is that when you have a program like this with so many participants, hundreds of thousands, as I mentioned, upwards of 8,000 in Massachusetts alone, the idea that the court could rule that it could go away and suddenly upend not only the lives of these people, but on the employers that rely on them and the schools and universities where they're enrolled, could create a lot of problem. And that was one reason why the lower courts kept this in place while these challenges worked their way up. There are a lot of things the court can do, even if they rule that the Trump administration can eliminate the program. They can do it in a phased way or send it down so and order the Department of Homeland Security to establish some sort of way to do it so that it's not the least so it's the least impact on these people. But at the end of the day, that would mean that these people would be eligible for deportation. Again, a reminder that there are more than 11 million people by conservative estimates in the country without proper documentation. And so the idea that they will all suddenly be deported is just not logistically possible. Generally speaking, there is a priority system that focuses on people who, you know, commit felonies or people who are suspected of terrorism. So they probably won't be deported, but they won't have that ability to work legally, to go to school or to enter the military.
Kimberly, when do you think the court is going to make its decision on this, and what happens between now and that time?
Well, that's also an interesting thing. Big cases like this tend to be among the last cases that the court decides, because usually there's a lot of arguments and dissents being written and the court really wrangles with it. So it could come out as late as June when the court's term ends. Of course, that will be right in the middle of the general election season when you'll have Donald Trump going against the Democratic nominee, and immigration promises to be a huge issue. So this could just throw fuel on the fire of that right in the middle of a very political time.
That's a very interesting timing. That is WBUR's senior correspondent, Kimberly Atkins. Kimberly, thanks for giving us some time.
My pleasure.
So here in Massachusetts, there are more than 5,600 DACA recipients monitoring this case closely. Some of them joined local advocates and political leaders at Cambridge City Hall today to speak out against the Trump administration's efforts to end the program. WBUR Shannon Dooling was there, and she joins us now in Studio 3. Shannon, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us what you saw and heard at today's event.
Right. Well, we heard from a few elected officials and local DACA recipients. And, you know, I have to say that after covering the developments around DACA for a few years now, this press conference had this sort of deja vu element to it, where we've been hearing these same arguments in favor of DACA. We've been hearing stories from DACA recipients for 2 years now, ever since the Trump administration tried to rescind the program in 2017. And it's really impactful to think about all of these young people and the very real limbo they've been living in all this time. And I got the sense that having the question before the Supreme Court, this question of whether the Trump administration was within its powers by ending the program the way it did, that at least offers this opportunity for some sort of resolution one way or another. It just feels like almost a culmination of sorts.
Shannon, what is the makeup of Dreamers here in the Commonwealth? Where are they from? Where are they living in the state?
Right. So we know that there are approximately 17,000 people who are eligible for DACA here in Massachusetts. But as of now, there are more than 5,600 active DACA recipients in the state. Interestingly, that number was more than 6,000 active DACA recipients in 2018. But since then, it's dropped a little bit. And that could be because people have chosen not to enroll with the news of the Trump administration trying to rescind the program. Maybe they think that they can't enroll. The application's also almost $500. You have to reapply every 2 years. And people may have possibly even dropped out of the program fearing that if it does indeed end, then they'll automatically be vulnerable for deportation. The majority of recipients do live in the greater Boston area. We know nationally the overwhelming majority of recipients are from Mexico, but here in Massachusetts, most of the people eligible for DACA are actually from Guatemala, Brazil, and El Salvador.
You heard us talk with Kimberly about the possible outcomes. What's at risk for DACA recipients?
I mean, the short answer is a lot, beyond even just, you know, the ultimate threat of deportation. DACA allows these folks to get a driver's license. They can apply for Social Security number. They can apply for in-state tuition in Massachusetts, work permits. And of course, I mean, just the overall peace of mind that comes with having a status, even if it is temporary.
And at the same time, what would Massachusetts lose if the court ultimately decides that DACA is unconstitutional, especially what would we lose economically?
Yeah, the fiscal price tag is pretty steep. I mean, you take into account the presence of DACA recipients in all sorts of sectors, students, teachers, doctors, business owners, homeowners, and they're taxpayers. And an analysis from the libertarian think tank, the Cato Institute, estimated Massachusetts's economy could stand to lose upwards of $924 million over 10 years if DACA were to disappear.
So this event today in Cambridge, Congresswoman Catherine Clark was there. Mm-hmm. What does she have to say?
Right. Well, of course, she represents Cambridge. She's calling on the Senate to take up the Dream and Promise Act, which she co-sponsored and which passed the House earlier this year. Many of the Massachusetts delegation, members of the Massachusetts delegation, co-sponsored that. That legislation would offer a pathway to citizenship for DACA and for temporary protected status recipients, TPS. We've heard a lot about that lately. And that's not currently an option that exists with either of those temporary statuses. Let's take a listen to Clark.
This is really giving a future for those young Americans who are already meeting with great academic success, serving in our military, who are parents of American children. This is what's at stake for our country. It is the fair and right and very American thing to do.
The Dream and Promise Act passed the House back in June, but since then it's just been stalled in the Senate.
There were some Dreamers who found their voices and really spoke out publicly today, too, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, the people who have chosen to speak out about their status and in favor of DACA, they are doing so knowing full well that they could be at risk of deportation at some point. And it's a risk they're willing to take. But, you know, a sentiment I've been hearing more of lately from DACA recipients, again, as this turmoil has sort of gone on for a few years now, here in Massachusetts, among many of them, there's this feeling of sort of being singled out as almost this sort of good, quote-unquote good immigrant, right? They're somehow more deserving than others who may have, don't qualify for DACA. Carlos Aguilar is a graduate student at Harvard. He's getting his PhD there, and he's also a Dreamer who came to the U.S. from Mexico when he was 14. He said, you know, sure, he's a success story, but he made a point to also say he's a reflection of his parents' hard work and sacrifices.
I am scared. I am tired of living like this. I know that many of us don't want to continue doing this and really want a protection not only for us but for our families.
So you can hear him there. There is really this feeling among many Dreamers that they'd like to see protections extended not just for themselves but for many undocumented immigrants overall.
What did Cambridge city officials have to say? I mean, the city's long referred to itself as a sanctuary city.
Yeah, I think it takes a lot of pride in the fact that it is one of the state's first, quote unquote, you know, so-called sanctuary cities, which isn't a legal definition, but really means there are pro-immigrant policies in place. The mayor there, Mayor Mark McGovern, pointed out that a third of the city's residents are foreign-born, and they don't have an exact figure of how many DACA recipients live in Cambridge, but they know many of them are working and living in Cambridge.
Are you hearing concern about the possible outcome of the case now that it's before the court?
Yeah, I mean, of course. It's been years of turmoil at this point. It means college students don't know if they'll be eligible for in-state tuition, parents with U.S. citizen children are having to think about hypothetical plans if they lose their DACA status. Homeowners are thinking about mortgage payments. It's a lot to consider.
So, Shannon, stay with us for a minute.
Sure.
To learn more about how this is resonating with the state's DACA recipients, we wanted to hear from one of them. Her name is Stephanie Pineda. We spoke with her this afternoon between her classes at UMass Boston, where she's a junior. She says that she and other Dreamers are hopeful but nervous.
right now, I'm just glad that this is getting to the Supreme Court. I'm glad there is a hearing today. But I feel like sometimes if it's not something like this, we're not talking about it. No senators, no Congress people are talking about it. And I feel like this has to be pushed more every day, not just when there's a hearing. So I feel like in that sense, sometimes we do take a few steps backwards. People want the decision to be made, but there's not a lot that goes into it before, again, one of the major things comes up.
You are a junior, and you have said a couple of times that you'd like to go to grad school. Junior year is a time when young people really start thinking of what comes next. How do you think about that for yourself in this moment of uncertainty?
About a week ago, I had my appointment with my advisor, and I was speaking to her on how my mind can't wrap around the fact that I'm almost done, and talking also about grad school plans. And I'm like, I know my permit expires next year, and it's like I still won't be done with my bachelor's degree. And if I'm able to reapply, depending on what happens, should I even be thinking about graduate school when I don't even know what's going to happen during my senior year of my undergrad?
Stephanie, last summer when we talked, you reflected on your decision last time to receive DACA status. You expressed some concern that you were sort of calling attention to yourself. You were saying, hey, I'm here. But ultimately, you decided to do it. It doesn't sound like you feel that way now. If the option to reapply comes up, it sounds like you would really want to do that. Is that true?
I feel like, yes, I'm still scared. That feeling is still there. But I feel like me not applying or not giving it another shot, whatever happens, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, I feel like at this point, I just want to do everything that's in my hands to be able to attain the goals and attain, I guess, as we're called dreamers, the dreams that I have for myself being in this country.
Stephanie, I know this is a really hard question, but there is a possibility that next summer the Supreme Court will find that the president has the authority to end DACA. If that happens, do you have any idea what you'll do?
I unfortunately haven't gotten there yet. I've been trying to maintain a positive attitude, but it's always trying to find a way where there seems to be no way. So I think if that decision were to be made, it's just being able to at least finish my undergrad and then see what happens from there, what personally a decision that's made on my life, and as well as in general for all DACA recipients.
Stephanie, you expressed some hope. What gives you hope?
I actually read something today that the president put out saying that all dreamers are not angels, that there are criminals. And again, just for whoever's hearing this, those of us who have received DACA and who continue to be able to reapply, we're still going to background checks. If there's something there that they don't like, then we won't receive that permit. So I just wanted to make that clear. But I think the hope goes into that aspect that we're, a lot of the dreamers are professionals. A lot of the dreamers are lawyers, teachers. And it's like, I just hope that whoever's making these big decisions on the lives of so many people, they realize that we've been fighting, that we're not doing anything wrong, that we're working, that we're professionals, that we're helping kids, that we're helping a variety of people, that we do give back to this country, so that they focus on the positives that we give to this country, which I think the positives are larger than the negatives.
That was Stephanie Pineda, who is a Massachusetts resident, a UMass student, and currently enrolled in DACA. And I want to turn back to WBUR's Shannon Dooling. Shannon, thanks for staying with us there. I know you know Stephanie. What's your reaction to what we just heard from her, and what do you think she should be expecting and thinking about as we move toward this Supreme Court decision?
Yeah, it's interesting to hear her think back on this. I actually met Stephanie on her first day of classes at UMass Boston, which happened to be the same day that Jeff Sessions announced the end of the DACA program. So here is this young woman who is in between classes, taking time out of her first day of university classes ever to sit and talk with a reporter about what she's thinking and feeling. And at that point, 2 years ago, she asked that she only be identified by her middle name because she was nervous to be on the record talking about this for fear of, you know, retribution. And it's remarkable, I think, to me to hear her really stand up and use not only her first name, but to say, I'm going to reapply and I'm going to find a way where there's no way. And so I think it's I'm struck by her evolution, but also I think by the fact that she's still trying to figure out a way to finish college. You know, that first day of college, she said, I'm just going to try to get through this day and then I'll try to get through the next day. And here we are 2 years later, and she's still really just trying to focus on one goal at a time.
Thanks for that. That's WBUR immigration reporter Shannon Dooling. I appreciate you joining us.
You're welcome.
Stay with us. Coming up, former Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick is considering jumping into the 2020 primary. Should he? We'll take your calls. I'm Tiziana Deering. This is Radio Boston.